Hey there, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for 2 for 1 at the movies on whatsupwestman.ca and CJ 106.5 FM, the Alternative Edge, Assiniboine Community College Radio. I'm Sean Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Stephen Jackson, and today we are talking about the movie The Dictator. The Sacha Baron Cohen movie is playing currently in the Empire Theaters here in Brandon and has met with some mixed results. But we're going to talk about The Dictator as well. We have an interview with the Canadian folk legend Garnet Rogers, who's playing a show Monday, May 28th, Music Studio in downtown Brandon. So we've got Garnet Rogers, we've got The Dictator, and we've got theater happenings around this city and so much more. So stay tuned right after the trailer, where Stephen and I will talk about The Dictator.
For over 4 decades, the people have lived under the rule of a tyrant who denies them their most basic human rights.
The time has come for him to step aside.
We must keep on with the NATO mission and bring him to justice.
I made that up.
It's the rock in the building. Yes, come on. I gotta tell you, but it's your boy Ho from the U.S. Yes.
WTF, what the fuhurma jalma amada
aliyah? Catch your boy mingling, ingling, meddling in the Netherlands, checking in daily under aliases.
America, the birthplace of AIDS.
Admiral General, welcome to New York City. And while you're here, I highly recommend a visit to the Empire State Building before you or one of your cousins takes it down.
One, young, two, you. One, two, three.
Malawa!
Megan, you were worth every penny.
I trust everything is in there as your manager requested.
What's this, a ruby? Is that a joke? What am I, a Kardashian?
No, of course not. You're much less hairy.
Oh, see, we don't stop.
On your marks. Get set!
Okay, as I mentioned in the opening, we are talking about The Dictator this week on What's Up Westman 2 for 1 at the Movies. As always, like I mentioned, I am joined by, once again, I'll throw it out there, the Wizard of Netflix, Stephen Jackson. And tonight we are talking about The Dictator, as well as we got an interview coming up with a Canadian folk music legend. Garnet Rogers is making a stop Monday, May 28th in Brandon. And we had a chance to talk to him the other day there. He was on the side of the road somewhere close to Duluth where he was heading in to set up for a show in a pouring rainstorm. So it was a very interesting interview, and also an interview that probably could have made a folk song in itself. So first of all, welcome back, Stephen.
Well, thank you very much for having me back.
It's awesome.
Interesting awesome. Movie this week, huh?
definitely a different movie, and right along the lines of the Sacha Baron Cohen movies. There wasn't a lot that I didn't expect out of this movie, but we'll definitely get into that. Like I say, as always, I'd like to take a quick moment and mention CJ 106.5, Assiniboine Community College Radio, for giving us the opportunity to get on the radio and share movies and theater happenings in Brandon. We both, you know, obviously from many miles apart, but we both enjoy being able to share that. So thank you once again to them. Looking at The Dictator, we're gonna jump right into this one because we've got a busy show this week. I'm gonna turn it over to Stephen, and he can give us kind of a rundown of what the movie is all about.
Now, I had to put the character's name on the screen because I have a hard time saying it sometimes. But so the story is about Hafez Aladdin. He's a dictator from a country called Wadija off the coast of Africa. They showed it in the movie. They showed where in Africa it is. And it's about this dictator whose life becomes threatened by, dissidents in his country. And The other problem, of course, he's dealing with is that he's wanting to create a nuclear program in his country, but the world wants him to stop. So they try to take this dictator over to the United States in order to, introduce him to the American public and to, I don't know. I guess the hope is that he'll like not throw a bomb at them. I guess that's the idea. But inadvertently, of course, he gets switched with a body double, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
What can you say really after that? You know, I mean, there's more to it, but
yeah, absolutely. You look at some of the stuff happening in the trailer and all that for people that haven't checked it out, and you know, you have him riding a camel in Times Square and stuff like that going on. Very kind of, for me, a typical Sacha Baron Cohen movie.
And, you know, it's interesting. I've actually never seen a Sacha Baron Cohen movie until this one.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't seen Borat or Bruno. And with the, well, I guess the exception, I guess, was Hugo, probably. Well, this wasn't Hugo, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
Do not take your kids to this movie.
You don't take your kids to this movie. You don't take women to this movie. Because there were so many offensive jokes towards women. And you hated yourself for laughing sometimes, but you did. It's such a raunchy humor to this movie. I found myself just absolutely either repulsed by what that happened or laughing. So I guess if that's what the intention was, then kudos to Sacha Baron Cohen.
For sure. I kind of thought the same, you know, it being a bit of a amalgamation of Borat and the movie Bruno. There was lots of moments in the movie Bruno that, as you mentioned, had those kind of repulsive moments where they were over the top and kind of gross. Borat had a few of those, but Borat, I thought, as a whole, was a lot more edgy movie, and it caught people off guard. So I think with
Aladdin, yes.
I think he does a good job of mixing those two characters.
Okay.
It, like I say, I was a huge fan of the movie Borat, and I know there was some highly offensive stuff happening in there, but Sacha Baron Cohen, I don't want to go out on a limb quite yet and say he's a Mel Brooks of his time, but the one thing Mel Brooks always did well is he made sure he didn't pick on any one person more than the other. He just insulted the whole in general.
Well,
and I think that's kind of where Cohen lands well with this.
Well, I think you're right. I think, you know, what's interesting about this movie is I like, again, you know, there's that repulsive, you're still laughing at it humor, but there's some neat truths underneath everything he says. And there are some moments where, you know, I laughed and then I had to think about it and go, but you know, that's almost what it is like. I'll give an example. The scene where he's helping the pregnant woman give birth to her child.
Right.
And he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry." And she looks at him really oddly and he says, "Well, it's a girl."
Yeah.
and it made me laugh because I realized, and then it made me think, go, oh, right, you know, in a lot of Middle Eastern cultures, to have a daughter is a great shame. And yeah, so there was this like moment like where I'm going, oh, what should I be doing with this? Should I be I'm kind of laughing, but it's not laughable. You know, it's one of those, it was an odd movie that way.
Yeah, it's I think, and also timing wise, you know, the movie come out, or the movie was really, a lot of it was being shot just at the start of the rise of the kind of Arab Spring. And, you know, some of the political unrest that was happening, obviously, in places like Egypt.
Yeah.
He does have a decent element of satire to what he does, and it like a political satire, and it's a strong satire. And a lot of people would shove this movie off as just being goofy and or repulsive or whatever, you know, the case may be. But I do think he is building a bit of a body of work where he is able to poke fun to an extreme at some of the issues that are happening in the world. And he did that really well with Borat because nobody's seen that movie coming, I don't think. And now, you know, obviously he's a little more, established, at least in North America. You know, he had a big career in Britain prior to this, but established in North America with movies like that.
It's actually the question I have is that, you know, if like, these three characters, I don't know if all three movies that well, but I'm just trying to think of is he acting these characters out? Is he creating characters, or are they very similar to each other? I mean, that's what I'm kind of curious about.
For sure. There's definitely a lot of similarities between Aladdin and Borat, with a lot of the kind of political jargon that he has going on, and especially a lot of the action dealing with women. You've seen some similarities and some lines that kind of stood out, and I remember from Borat, Bruno was completely different than Borat. Bruno was, you know, he was a homosexual fashion designer, and you know, some of the play that they had going on there, I found, especially with Bruno, it to be far more offensive than Borat. And with this movie as well, I thought, you know, he went back to that style, the Borat style humor. And I think it just plays a little better with audiences.
Okay, fair enough. He's definitely in control of this film. Like, he's in every single scene. There's rarely a scene where he's not in it. He even creates a character who's a double of himself just to make sure he's still in the same scene. Well, you know, I mean, and that's true, right? I mean, it's a very short movie. It's only 84 minutes, and he's like literally in every minute of the 84 minutes. Like, there's no doubt he's the star of the show.
Absolutely. And you know, it almost looked like Eddie Murphy had done with stuff like The Nutty Professor, you know, where you take and it's your vehicle completely, so you maintain that level of control and you maintain that level of you know, believability in the characters by playing multiple characters, and he kind of does in this movie as well, eh? Like,
yeah. So you think Sacha Baron Cohen's gonna play like five characters in his next one?
Yeah. You know, and it's quite possible. It's quite possible, and I do like his style of humor, Borat, and obviously this one, The Dictator, more than I did the Bruno style of humor. The Bruno style of humor was the taking everything disgusting to the absurd, right? And it didn't resonate well with me, but I did like this style of humor, and he does have a kind of modern Mel Brooks quality, I think, to him, where okay, you can poke fun at people like that. Let's talk, maybe, like you say, you know, it was a short movie. Talk a little bit about the writing, and you know, obviously Sacha Baron Cohen was a producer. I'm not sure, I don't think he was the director though.
No, it's Larry Charles who's the director. And Larry Charles had directed both Bruno and Borat.
Right.
So there's definitely a commonality for him to be working with him. But it's actually Larry Charles is also the, one of the creators or producers of Seinfeld, Mad About You on TV. He actually did a show I really, really loved that only lasted like 10 episodes. It was called The Tick. I'm not sure if you've heard a long way back about a guy who dresses up in a big blue tick costume and fights crime in the street.
It was based on a comic book, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was based. Well, they did a cartoon series. It was based on, I think, I'm trying to remember what comic book company did the actual Tick comic book, but it might be an Image or something like that. But yeah, no, I mean, he's known for doing very different things and being very fairly cutting edge, you know. And so, I think they definitely work well together. I'm not sure if I saw necessarily a strong visual style in this movie. That makes any sense. Like, I didn't see, I think it was just more or less trying to capture Sacha Baron Cohen in every frame he could find.
Right.
Like, I don't think there was any, I couldn't really find a great style to his directing and such. Oh, but I guess we're talking about writing as well, too. I mean, that's another whole angle of this movie film altogether, isn't it?
Yeah. And with this film, and especially, like, interesting to note that he was the director on Borat and Bruno as well, especially with Borat. It had a very interesting appeal to it in the sense that it was shot documentary style, and you know, they got in a lot of trouble after the fact with some of the people that they brought into the film and didn't have, you know, the proper paperwork for them to appear in the film and that type of thing.
I heard this film that he really they cut back on the improvisation with non-actors type thing, with people on the street and stuff like that. They really cut back on that just for those same legal issues.
Right, right. As far as writing, as far as the script's concerned, obviously Sacha Baron Cohen, like you say, it's cut back from the improv style that he's been known for through Ali G or through his previous movies. What did you think of the script?
I mean, I found some parts just really quite funny, and then I found some parts just didn't quite hit the mark. But, and the story, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, the idea of trying to find himself through the young girl who works in the organic grocery mart, complete opposite character to him. Well, you know, it's interesting. It's not necessarily a strong story going on. I mean, there's a little bit of it, but there wasn't a lot of story or a lot of plot to this movie. It was just it was almost just to see if you can kind of where can you throw jokes into the cultural references that he's talking about.
Right.
I think it was more of that than necessarily a story structure going on. But I mean, again, it's all about his humor, though. So if it's about his humor, then it actually works. But if you're looking for a story or for like a plot line that's involving you, I guess it's a little hit and miss sometimes.
Right. Any of the other cast kind of stand out to you?
Well, you know, one person who didn't get really acknowledged in the credits too much was John C. Reilly, who I quite liked as the as the guy who kidnaps kidnaps him at one point.
Right.
Yeah, he was quite funny, actually. I quite enjoyed him. Ben Kingsley was quite good, but I mean, nothing too out there. He was a straight man to Sasha being the guy who makes the jokes type thing. I really enjoyed, I keep trying to track down who the name of the guy was. The gentleman who played the head of the nuclear program that he tried to get removed, and then meets him in New York, and that's where they bond, I guess, as it were. I don't know who that actor was. Did you find out who that actor was?
Like the one that played Omar?
Is that Omar? Is that his name, Omar?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I found him fascinating. I really
enjoyed it. Syed Barre.
Yeah. I just found him just really fascinating to watch. And it's because he could play jokes, but he could also play kind of a seriousness too. And I just really enjoyed watching his character kind of as the movie went on. I didn't realize after his scene where he gets, you know, taken away by the whatever that country's police. when he got taken away, I didn't think he was going to come back. And also he ends up being in New York in that little bar restaurant of all the people that the main character had tried to kill.
Yeah. Yeah. When he gets pulled away there, it's kind of Austin Powers-ish in a way. You know, I'm not dead yet, you know.
One, I liked how these little flashbacks of what had happened to cause that man to be supposedly be executed and then end up alive.
Right.
And then he looked at the beef. That was hilarious. The cow he sent to slaughter, and it came to New York too, apparently. So, I mean, that scene was very funny. That one little scene with that. And then that was the reintroduction of that main character, or that the doctor, or the head of the nuclear program. He was quite fascinating.
For sure. We've gone back to back now 2 weeks in a row with actor-director combos that have played together for a long time. Last week, you know, we were talking about Dark Shadows with Johnny Depp, Tim Burton. And then this week with Larry Charles there and Sacha Baron Cohen. Do you think the element of the two of them working together will work again for a film, or do you think people will start to wear on this style of humor?
Well, I think they're already wearing on it a little bit. I mean, this film, for record's sake, this film actually costs about $65 million to make. I'm sure Borat didn't cost anywhere near that,
right?
Because it could be in the first one. What's interesting about this combo is that, where when we talked about Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, there's such you could sense both people in this film. Where I feel with this type of film, and I'm not sure if it goes with the other ones, is that it's more Sacha Baron Cohen's movie than Larry David or Larry Charles.
Right.
Larry
David, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that'd be really fascinating. Larry Charles. Because I think I didn't really get a strong visual sense from this film, like of the director type thing. He was, again, just trying to make sure he captures, you know, the main character as much as possible. So I think that's a little different. I don't see this one type of movie happening again very soon. It's just because I don't know if audiences are really picking up on this movie. It didn't really do that well at the box office this weekend. So it did okay, but not that great.
Still up against the Avengers juggernaut there.
Yeah, even like no one's going up against the Avengers right now, really. Not doing very well. This week, there's a better chance of something taking over, but... Well, hard to say, because Men in Black comes in, or Men in Black 3 comes this week, so...
I had heard there was a movie, and I can't remember it off the top of my head right now, that was bumped up a month.
G.I. Joe Retaliation?
That was it, yeah.
Not a month, by the way.
Oh, no?
It was moved to March 2013.
Oh, so it's gone the other way.
It went... What happened was that it was supposed to be play on June 29th.
Right.
And they moved it all the way to March 2013.
Just because it didn't want to go against the Avengers.
Well, I don't know if it want to go against Avengers. It's I think the other problem with it, well, their reasoning was about how they wanted to improve the 3D effects more for it.
Right.
But I'm like, well, is that really a good reason? That's a long time to move a movie back. Like, that's like over half a year. Like almost three quarters of a year. So I'm a little scared for G.I. Joe Retaliation. I'm not too sure how good it's going to be. It's also moved into what's known as the death part of the year, pretty much. You don't really premiere movies in March. It's right. Not known for bringing out the classic movies.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I see Bruce Willis in that one.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's got a... It literally had some potential, but I'm also kind of guessing that they did a test screening for this and it just didn't do very well. I think that's probably the reason why it's not playing the summer.
Right.
The whole idea, you know, every movie goes through a test screening. Often, like comic book movies, they try and show them to conventions and such.
Right.
But I'm thinking with G.I. Joe, it just didn't test very well.
Kind of an interesting move, and it's, you know, it may pay off for them in the end, but it does come off fairly weak, you know, as far as your brand.
Yeah, I mean, the first movie, I think everyone expected the first movie to do much better than it did. And, it did okay, but it didn't do great. Ones like Clash of the Titans also were in that, you know, that same kind of boat where it did well, the first one, but didn't really do great. I mean, you know, for what it cost to make the movie. I'm not saying, not every movie that goes into March is going to be a dud. I mean, let's face it. We were talking a number of weeks ago about Silence of the Lambs. Well, Silence of the Lambs was a movie that premiered in March and it ended up being Best Picture of the year next year round. So, I mean, there's always hope, but usually when you place a movie in March, February, March, it's not a pretty picture then, probably.
Right. Getting back to the dictator there,
yeah,
another question there for you. We talk a lot about on this show about art direction and the art and style of a film. You had mentioned earlier that it was kind of lacking of any direct style. What do you think you would have done different, or what could they have done different to create a better look for the film and not just to be 84 minutes of Sacha Baron Cohen jokes?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I think, you know, it all comes down to the story you're creating. I mean, there are some, like, neat visuals, like his palace in Wodeja is quite fascinating to look at. But I guess here's a great example. Look at Sacha Baron Cohen's last movie, which was Hugo. There was a definite artistic sense of what the film was looking like. Like, right. You had a good idea. Even with some, like, Dark Shadows, which, I mean, we both didn't really get into that much. But there was, a very strong visual style. I didn't see it in this one, and I'm not sure if, you know, would some different art direction have helped that? I don't know. I mean, I think that because you're focusing so much on his character, that some of the things get lost. I mean, and let's face it, we've seen movies where it's the opposite way, where they focus so much on the backgrounds and the scenery and stuff like that, that they actually forget the characters. We've seen that happen many, many times. I don't know. It depends whether or not a film like this lends itself to being a visual movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, we're kind of going into a time when movies are all about the visuals. Like, even if, you know, if Avengers had been like a silent movie, there would have been this amazing visual sense about the film type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not sure if The Dictator had... I mean, coming at the very end of it, I couldn't really, you know... I couldn't grasp on what it really looked like at the end. You know what I mean? I think that's... It's, there's nothing, there wasn't something that was really tying me to the film. Visually, at least, yeah.
Do you think... Dan, this is more of a political question, but do you think Sacha Baron Cohen runs a risk in patterning his character after... two deceased dictators? You know, like he said openly in interviews that he patterned the character after a mix of Saddam Hussein, obviously from Iraq, yeah, and Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Do you think he runs a risk in you know, patterning and putting his character out there and saying that he's, I don't want to say mocking, but he's pointing out the worst of these people that potentially in certain areas of the world still hold a lot of value to people?
Well, and you know, it's interesting. That's a great point. I mean, and I think we saw it at the box office this week when we saw that the movie really didn't jump out to people. And I think it's a twofold thing, actually. I think first thing is, well, this movie's not going to play well in a lot of foreign countries that either deal with these type of regimes. A, the movie's not going to play there anyways.
Right.
Because they're probably banned it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Banned in half a country, like at least 20 countries in the world. But the other thing is that are we tired of movie or of dictators? Are we tired of seeing them on the screen so much? And so, I mean, and I'm talking like the TV screens and all that sort of thing, and the internet. We're so connected that we see everything about them. Are we getting tired of them? And I think that may be what kind of happened this past weekend. I think people went for the humor of Sacha Baron Cohen, but I think the idea of like a dictator just kind of wears a little thin after a while for people, I think. And I think they want, you know, a more, you know, rounded character. If they can, like a lot of what this gentleman says, or this character says in the movie, while very funny, I mean, it sounds like the dictators he's talking about. And I think that could run the risk of just kind of alienating some audiences completely who don't want to deal with it right now. Or if they live in a country nearby in that area type thing, again, they deal with it on an everyday basis.
Right. Yeah. I know he patterned the Borat character off of a news reporter from Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
And it, funny enough, and it's humorous, but at the same time, it's kind of sad. I seen a YouTube clip of a gymnast that had won recently in a world event, mm-hmm, who was from Kazakhstan, and they played the Borat version of the Kazakhstan national anthem when she won. And you're watching this video, and I'll see if I can find it and link it in the show notes there, but you're watching this video and you can hear Sacha Baron Cohen singing his rendition of the Kazakhstan national anthem, and you know he's singing about all the potassium that they produce and you know how comments on their women and that type of thing, and I'm just watching this and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a world sanctioned event that this gymnast has won at, and they throw this national anthem in. So it was quite, you're kind of gobsmacked by it and sitting back. So,
well, I think that's, you know, that brings up a great point of, because this film is a satire. That's what it's meant to be. But is it a satire that, I mean, I know you felt a little too, there's some very offensive stuff in this film and you laughed at certain things. But then you felt kind of guilty for laughing later. And then it's interesting. The idea of satire, I mean, it's supposed to entertain us to some degree, but sometimes satire can hit a little too close to home.
Right.
And I'm wondering if, you know, some of the stuff they talked about, it's like we're still dealing with a lot of these issues in the world type thing, the role of women in a lot of these countries and the oppression they go through. And I just wonder, you know, I mean, sometimes it sounds funny but on paper, but I'm wondering when you really think about it, is it really that funny?
And
we're not in that position that care of the person who actually is living that life type thing.
Right. So. And satire works, you know, I'll bring back Mel Brooks as an example again. Mm-hmm. You know, Mel Brooks makes a lot of reference to Jewish culture, mm-hmm, but he's also a Jewish man himself, yeah. Right? Sacha Baron Cohen has poked fun, you know, at the Kazakhstan culture. He's poked fun at the kind of Scandinavian cultures, and he's poked fun now at the Middle Eastern cultures as a British man.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, and at the end of the film, he pokes fun at the Americans too, right? Like, I mean, there's a whole last monologue he does when he's talking about democracy, and he pokes fun at all the Americans as well too. And again, I didn't necessarily laugh at it. I mean, I found it revealing in some ways, and it was interesting. But why hasn't he tried to do a satire of British culture?
Right.
If he's British, wouldn't that be the ideal thing? I know you were saying he's British and everything, but I think he really does fall under an American type of mentality of humor. And I think, you know, and we can debate this too on like the idea of Canadian humor versus American humor. But like Canadian humor, we know how to make fun of ourselves.
Right.
Once in a while we tell a joke about someone else, but we know how to make fun of ourselves. Just yeah. easy. We know the jokes about ourselves.
Yeah.
Where it's very hard to take sometimes a person who makes fun of other people's cultures that seriously if he's not willing to make the chance to make fun of his own culture.
Right. Yeah. You see that a lot of times too with comedians, people like Chris Rock and that type of thing, that, you know, where they've pointed out even in their comedy routines, we can make fun of ourselves, just you don't make fun of us, right? And that
yeah.
That kind of is sort of the Sacha Baron Cohen effect here. And you know, maybe we're delving way too deep into it, but sometimes a movie's just a movie, right?
And sometimes yes. And I think I came out of it out of my lonely little theater. And
yeah, I wanted to ask you about this, and for the folks listening, we talked last week, and I might have been foreshadowing a bit because we talked a little bit about going to the theater and being the only person in the theater, and I asked Stephen, I said, you know, grew up in Manitoba, now living in Toronto, been to a ton of movies. Have you ever been the only person in the theater? And he said, no, I haven't. And I've had that experience once. It wasn't in Brandon. It was actually in Weyburn, Saskatchewan. But Stephen, now I'm going to give you the floor because you had a moment of enlightenment, I guess you could say, this week. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because I thought, my God, Sean is a fortune teller or something. Because lo and behold, I went to see The Dictator yesterday. At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I just finished work. I got out a little early and went to my job, and I got to see this movie. And so I got into the theater and I look around. There's no one there. I'm like, oh, no. There'll be people showing up, and the movie starts to roll. I look around. There's still no one there, and it was interesting. I mean, the first thing I noticed was interesting was when you're out in the lobby. First of all, like the staff was just not prepared for people in general.
Right. Because
they're like, oh, a person, you know. It was like there was so few people coming in, and like I went to go get a drink, a bottle of water before I went into the theater, and all the staff was congregating at the very far end, and I had to finally go down to them and say, oh, can I get a bottle of water here? Oh, I'll have to take you all the way down here. And I had to walk all the way back down the road, cash registers. It was quite funny. And then of course being in the theater by myself, and you know, I laughed at parts of the movie, but you know, being in the theater by yourself, it makes you want – it really tells you a lot about the role of an audience and how it relates to what you're watching.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, if I'd watched that movie with a lot more people, maybe I would have laughed a little more. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. I mean, but, you know, that was the film I chose and the time slot I chose, and I now have the experience of being the only person in the theater.
There you go. And like you mentioned, like you say, the role of an audience plays huge for especially a comedy, but for a lot of movies, like you'd mentioned a couple of weeks ago with our Avengers episode, where you said, you know, you're in this movie and they're making reference to these characters and that type of thing, and being around comic book people watching this movie, and you get the oohs and the ahs and, you know, kind of room excitement on that.
And it's like a bonding experience. It's like you want to turn around and see that person who also oohed and go, yeah, you got it too.
Yeah.
And it's like this like fraternity of like comic book people type thing. And when you're the only person in the theater, you lose the fraternity pretty fast.
I'm not even sure
there was anyone running the projector technically.
Yeah, it's all automated, eh?
It is. Yeah, I'm like I even look back there for some like for some companionship and nothing, you know. Look back in there, it's just the machine and no one there. I'm like, oh, this must be just me, I guess. So,
right. We're going to take a quick run around here and take a look at what else is playing in Brandon this week at the Empire Theaters. Obviously, as you know, the Evans Theater is on their summer hiatus right now. But we will keep track on any kind of theater shows that are happening in there. At the Empire Theater this week, we have Battleship continuing its run in there. The Rihanna...
My partner saw Battleship, actually, so...
Oh, okay, and...
I'm hoping we weren't ever going to review this movie, because I just had such an aversion to this movie from the very get-go. I remember the first trailer I saw for Battleship, but I went, I never want to see this movie, ever.
Right.
My partner actually liked it, so... I knew some people actually did like it. I mean, it was fun, lots of explosions, lots of action, so that's all good and everything, but I really wanted some connection to the Battleship game.
For
which
sure, yeah.
It's for about 2 seconds in the movie.
Right, yeah. So excellent. We got both the Marvel Avengers, both the 3D and the standard def version, I guess you could say. The Dictator as well. New one coming out, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Kind of looks like a decent movie. It's got 3 out of 5 stars on there right now, but it's still early in its run. Also looking at Chernobyl Diaries is playing there.
Mm. Okay.
Which has an interesting trailer. I like what they've done with the trailer, and it might be something I want to check out. It kind of reminds me of 30 Days a Night trailer, but you know, set in the Chernobyl world. So
I think the Blair Witch Project set in Chernobyl.
Yeah, you know, that kind of like bump in the night type scariness that goes on there. So
the moving camera around to give you more fear and stuff.
Yeah. Very stylized directorial choice there, right? You know, and that's where Blair Witch did it well, and then movies like Scary Movie mocked it well. So it should be interesting. As well,
those types of films, you go to them for the experience and to see the experience of almost feeling like you're actually in the spot that the characters are at.
Right, and that was definitely the experience, and we'll make mention Steven's brother Ken. I actually with my wife and Ken and I had went and seen 30 Days a Night together.
Oh.
And that's a couple of years ago now, but they made you feel like you're in that Alaska town being ravaged by vampires. Not a lot of thinking going on there, but you know, it does create an experience with that, you know, the moving cameras, the moving shots, the kind of haunting music that goes along with it. It was quite well done. So as well, we're looking at the Empire. We got Dark Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Still playing there. Here you go, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Is it playing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I gotta tell you about that movie.
There we go.
Awesome.
See this movie.
I swear it's a wonderful movie.
It's got 4.5 out of 5 stars, so
it deserves it. It's right now it's only playing in less than 400 screens in North America.
Right.
And it's still in the top 10 movies. It's being, it hasn't ever risen above 400 screens, but it's doing very well for a limited release movie.
And what's it about?
It's about a group of senior citizens who are all at different stages in their lives. So they're all dealing with kind of different issues, either relationships or dealing with the passing of a relationship, dealing with things, opportunities that were lost to them in the past. And so they get on this trip together to India to go to this Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, where they think they're going to be pampered and treated really well. Well,
right.
That's not exactly what happens. They ended up in this really kind of, I don't want to say the word, I can't say it on air, really run down hotel.
Right.
But they still deal, they have to kind of deal with the realities of their situation in a sense.
Okay.
And there's just an amazing cast, this movie. Tom Wilkinson, Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, Bill Nye, Dev Patel, you might remember from Slumdog Millionaire.
Right, yeah.
Just an amazing cast of characters. And it's not fluffy. It's not, I mean, they deal with some issues and stuff, relationships and everything, but it's just a really wonderful movie. I was really caught by Tom Wilkinson's story in it because it kind of snuck up on you.
Okay.
Exactly why he's there type thing. But all the actors are just absolutely amazing in this movie. I mean, it's not one of those ones that win an Oscar type thing, but it's just a really great movie to go to. And they don't like condescend about the ages of senior citizens and such. So I definitely recommend seeing it.
Excellent.
I might be able to do a review for it pretty soon, actually, so people can get an idea.
Awesome. So yeah, we'll check back on the site there, and Stephen, I'll get a in-depth review there up there on the show. Following rounding out the Empire Theaters, we've got the 5-year engagement still playing there, and The Lucky One remains in theaters as well there. Flipping over to Box Office Mojo, because we've been watching this for the last couple of weeks, kind of where the Avengers is sitting, and I'm looking at domestic gross numbers. It looks like Marvel's The Avengers now is sitting in fifth.
Yep.
I believe.
It's starting to take out all the Star Wars movies now.
Yeah. It just took out A New Hope this past week. And it's inching closer towards Episode One. And then
it'll be past it tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess it will be, won't it? Yeah.
Pretty much. And then it's going to be a little bit of a hike before it gets up to Dark Knight, Titanic, and Avatar. I'm not sure if it's going to make it that far. I mean, it's doing quite well and everything, but I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's ever going to reach Avatar. Like $760, you know, million dollars is quite a big number to try and hit.
Right. So. It's once it passes Phantom Menace there, it's kind of in rarefied air there.
Yeah. I think it could very well beat out Dark Knight. I think it's a possibility.
Right.
But I don't think it's going to hit Titanic or Avatar.
Right. It's definitely, and like you say, it's probably getting to that point where it's losing a bit of fuel right now, where you can see that it's not climbing at the same rate. Not that, you know, that amount, you know, is not a decent amount of money to make on a film, but it turned out so quickly in those first week and a bit and made it jump so high. But yeah,
You can say that. It's interesting, though, but generally a movie from its first to its second week loses around 60% of its box office. Well, this one didn't. It only lost less than 50% from its first to second week, and again from its second to its third week. So you never know. It's actually holding very well, considering.
Right.
But the thing is, it hasn't really had any really good competition. This week's kind of the first week it actually has a fairly weighty competition against it. So,
right. Do you think at the end of this week it'll still be number one?
No, I think you're gonna see Men in Black 2 come in number one.
Right.
But you know something? I was telling someone about this movie as well too. I was mentioning that I don't think Men in Black 2 is gonna be the huge massive hit that people think it's gonna be or people want it to be.
Right.
And it's been a long time since number two.
Right, and, yeah.
I mean, Will Smith hasn't exactly had a huge hit, like, in a long time. Like, not, you know. Yeah, I think you're gonna see Men in Black come in around the $60 to $70 million range.
Right.
I think Avengers is going to hold in about maybe 30. That's kind of my estimate, probably.
Right. Did you see this week the news story on Will Smith pushing the reporter?
Yeah, I heard about that, but you knew why he got pushed, right?
Yeah, the guy comes in to kiss him or something like that, doesn't he?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not really sure what that was all about, really, too much. I don't think it's going to hurt his reputation whatsoever, but it's the day in the life of a celebrity, I guess. You
know? Yeah.
Someone gets kissed, someone gets pushed. You know?
Yeah, and he gives them the little tap on the face there, too.
Don't worry. All they have to do if there's any damage, all they have to do is have Will Smith save someone's life. So don't worry.
Yeah, absolutely. Eh. I'm just going to take a quick mention here. Say hello to a couple of people that have reached out to us on the podcast, and we thank them very much for listening. I would like to say hello to Naomi Ledbetter and Kyle Loheed as well. Have both reached out to us on Twitter and commented that they are enjoying the podcast. So very much appreciated. And anybody that does want to get a hold of us, just at What's Up Westman, all one word on Twitter. And we'd be happy to chat with you about movies or whatever the case may be. I'm going to take a quick moment. We're going to flip over some audio here. I talked to Garnet Rogers the other day. Garnet Rogers is a Canadian folk singer who's making a stop in Brandon on Monday, May 28th. At the music studio venue, the corner of 10th and Rosser downtown there. He's playing an intimate sort of studio club style setting show. For people that don't know, Garnet has been touring for 30 odd years in North America and has made a real name for himself and is an independent recording artist and likes to stay that way. And is also the brother of the late Stan Rogers, who people will know as a Canadian folk legend as well. So I'm just going to take a moment. We'll flip over to that audio, take a listen to my chat with Garnet Rogers, and we'll be right back. Well, you've spent the balance of your adult life touring and recording great music. What do you see has changed for you over the years touring North America?
Oh, God. All I can think of is what Johnny Cash said about the difference between touring in the old days and touring now. He says, back in the old days, you couldn't get extra crispy. But I don't know what's changed in the outward world. I know that I'm older and I'm more tired, and I choose my periods during which I want to work a little more carefully now.
For sure. I noted you remained independent for most of your career of major record labels.
Oh, yeah.
What freedoms do you feel it's offered you and your music to produce through your homegrown record label?
Well, it is complete artistic freedom, and the records and the songs, you know, stand and fall on their own. I had a number of approaches from either major labels or from big independents, and they'd say, well, you know, you need to be with us, and you need to do this, and you need to do that, and they'd say, well, what about artistic control? And they'd say, well, oh, you'd have complete artistic control. And I'd say, well, that's okay, let's take it from there. And then the next thing out of their mouth would be, well, first thing we have to do is get you a big-name producer. And, well, I don't want a big-name producer. And they'd say, well, yeah, we really think you need one. And I said, well, what about artistic control? Oh, yeah, you'd have complete artistic control. But, you know, it's just this bizarre contradiction that they don't seem to hear. So, it's controlling your production, controlling your means of production, and controlling the thing that you are offering to the world. I don't want to have to argue with somebody, with what I'm doing.
For sure.
It's just not worth it.
For people that maybe aren't as aware of your music, where do you draw some of your musical influences from?
I listened to all the usual stuff that someone of my age did back in the day. The folk boom during the early '60s. My life was completely changed by the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Jimi Hendrix and all the rest of it. So a lot of it's very guitar driven, and I'm still kind of experimenting with sort of a serious love affair with the electric guitar. Although most of what I do is very soft and acoustic, I still really love the electric part of things.
Excellent. Here's a curveball question for you. What does it mean to Garnet Rogers to be Canadian?
Well, I'll tell you right now, one of the things it means to me is having some sort of access to reasonable and affordable health care. I'm taking care of my elderly parents right now. That takes up a lot of my time. And I see what happens to my my friends in the United States, and they have all the problems that I have, except they have to spend all their day fighting with insurance companies and pharmaceuticals. I think the way I'm, you know, the Canadians are perceived, like I'm in the United States right now as we speak, and Canadians tend to be perceived as very much the sort of uber folk singer, songwriter animal. They seem to think that's all we grow up in Canada is folk singers. And I'm perfectly fine with that take on it. I'm happy to call myself a folk singer. I really believe in the whole concept of community and reaching out to people, and the fact that the concerts are not necessarily about me, they're about people being in a room together, and just, you know, we're all doing something together.
Excellent. That led me into my next question, was what the audiences in Brandon can expect from the show. So you mentioned you're in the United States today. Whereabouts are you headed?
I'm playing in Duluth tonight, Duluth, Minnesota.
And then it's an early morning hop in the van and keep carrying on?
I'll be in Thunder Bay tomorrow night, which is not too bad of a drive.
For sure. I noted another passion in talking with the folks from the music studio here in Brandon. Another passion is raising horses. Could you tell me a little bit more about that aspect of your life?
Well, it's mostly my wife's passion. I kind of got into it kind of secondhand, but it's definitely a big part of my life. We have a very well-respected thoroughbred stallion who's having another very busy season right now as a stud, you know, breeding mares, and we've got a yard full of brood mares as well. That, you know, some are older, some are younger, some are still viable. Others are going to be just with us until they go to their reward. So it's something we both love. My wife certainly more than I do. But I have really grown into it, and I would miss them if they weren't in my life. As far as the show goes in Brandon, I mean, it's just me and a bunch, you know, maybe 7 or 8 or 9 guitars all tuned differently, and they all sound different, and I never know what the show is going to bring. I'm in the middle of writing a book right now. It's sort of a memoir of my years on the road with my brother, and I've been reading little bits and pieces of that, and it's fairly, some of it's fairly smutty, some of it's just merely R-rated. But it's all meant to be funny, so people seem to be enjoying the bits that I'm reading.
Okay, as I mentioned, Garnet Rogers will be playing Monday, May 28th, 8 p.m. showtime at the Music Studio. You can check out our website, whatsupwestman.ca, for more info, where we have ticket info, how to reserve tickets and that type of thing. For anyone that who checked out the last show there at the Music Studio, Shane Koizan, you know they bring in some great acts here, so if you have the chance and you have $20 in your pocket, get out there and see Garnet Rogers, because I guarantee you it'll be a good, entertaining evening and a good storyteller as well. So I know, Stephen, you've probably heard some of his music as well out Ontario way.
I've heard a little bit of his music. I've heard some of his brother's music as well too. So yeah, again, you know, you mentioned like the artists they brought in, like Shane Koizan as well too. You know, that's amazing that you're going to get the chance to see some of these artists come to Brandon and such. You know, they may not be, you know, the top 40 stars we have right now, but sometimes you get a better show out of them because you get a more intimate experience from them.
For sure. And funny enough, as you'll hear in the audio there, I was talking with Garnet, and he's living the folk singer's life, I guess you could still say. I was talking to him traveling on his own between somewhere near Duluth, and he was rolling into town for a show, and he was in a blinding rainstorm. So I interviewed him on the side of the highway during this rainstorm. So we wish him the best of luck, safe travel. He plays in Thunder Bay over the weekend, and then he's Monday, May 28th, he's in Brandon. So we wish him the best, safe travels, and we look forward to the show. Speaking of shows, we've come to the end of our run for this week. Obviously, we were looking at the movie The Dictator. We looked at some of the other movies happening at the Capitol Theater, or Empire Theater, sorry, and some other theater happenings around town. So Once again, I would like to tip my hat and thank Stephen for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me again. And again, you know, check out some great movies this weekend.
Excellent. And as always, you can check out our podcasts. They are available through iTunes. So if you miss the show on CJ106, you can check us out on iTunes just by searching What's Up Westman. Or our podcasts are, as always, available on our website, whatsupwestman.ca, where we are covering arts, entertainment, lifestyle, and culture happenings in the city. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Take care, and we'll talk to you again real soon.